The winter of 1129 was no ordinary winter in the heart of French Champagne. Over the city of Troyes, capital of the county that bore its name, loomed an atmosphere heavy with religious and political expectation. The cobblestone streets, covered in a frost that crunched beneath the boots of pilgrims and dignitaries, led toward the cathedral where some of the most influential men in Western Christendom were to gather. This was not just another assembly of the kind that the 12th century had seen multiply across Europe. It was, in every possible sense, a foundational moment. Within those stone walls, an idea that had germinated in the dusty camps of the Holy Land was about to receive the weight of official church recognition, the blessing of the papacy, and the canonical structure that would transform a handful of devout knights into one of the most powerful institutions in medieval history. To understand the magnitude of what occurred in Troyes, it is necessary to step back just a decade and place oneself in the narrow, careless alleys of Jerusalem, that city which the First Crusade had wrested from Muslim control in 1099 with a violence that left deep scars in the memory of all peoples involved. The Crusader kingdom established after that conquest was, in military and logistical terms, extraordinarily fragile. Pilgrims arriving from Europe to visit the holy sites traveled roads infested with bandits, crossed mountain passes where ambushes were frequent, and died in numbers that scandalized those who heard of it in the West. The religious enthusiasm that had driven the crusade had not solved the practical problem of protecting travelers in a land where the balance of power was constantly disputed. It was within this context of vulnerability and need that a Burgundian knight named Hugh of Pains conceived an answer that, at first glance, seemed like a theological contradiction. The warrior who was also a monk, the man who took up the sword in the name of Christ without renouncing vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Along with 8 companions, among whom his relative Godfrey of St. Omer stood out, Hugh presented himself to Baldwin II, King of Jerusalem, around the year 1119 with a concrete proposal. They wanted to form a brotherhood of knights to protect the roads of the Holy Land, to act as an armed escort for pilgrims, and to do so under a religious rule, renouncing individual wealth and living in community. Baldwin II, well aware of his kingdom's limitations and always in need of capable, committed men, welcomed them gladly and granted them a wing of the royal palace as their headquarters, located over the ruins of the ancient Temple of Solomon. From this would spring the name that would make them famous through the centuries. The Poor Knights of Christ and of the Temple of Solomon, known simply as the Templars. During their first years, however, the Brotherhood lived in a sort of institutional limbo. They had a mission, they had a headquarters, they had the informal support of the King of Jerusalem and the Patriarch of the city, but they lacked something essential. The formal recognition of the Church of Rome. Without that recognition, they could not receive donations in an organized manner, they could not recruit members with canonical guarantees, they could not expand their structure, nor could they codify their rule of life. They were, in legal ecclesiastical terms, an ambiguous entity. And in the 12th century, institutional ambiguity was a weakness that could prove fatal. It was this need for legitimacy that led Hugh of Pains to undertake, in 1127, a journey that would take him away from the Holy Land for 2 years and culminate precisely in the halls of the Council of Troyes. Hugh of Pains's journey through Europe was, in itself, an exercise in diplomacy and religious propaganda of remarkable efficacy. He traveled through the courts of the principal monarchs and feudal lords of the West, eloquently describing the plight of pilgrims in the Holy Land, the need for devout knights to protect the holy places, and the project of an order that would combine monastic virtue with military efficiency. In every place he visited, he garnered sympathy, promises of support, and, in some cases, concrete donations. In Scotland and England, King Henry I received him warmly. In France, the great lords of the nobility listened to his proposal with genuine interest.